Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Well, we've got a topic today that is so wonderful in my mind's view, because not only is it inspirational, but it gives an insight into experiences that thousands of people around the world have had. But for so many years, the scientific community just said, nope, this can't be possible, blah, 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 went on and on. Well, there's a woman. Her name is P.M.H. Atwater. She has put together the big book of near-death experiences, The Ultimate Guide to What Happens When We Die. She has gone not just that extra mile, she's gone the extra 1,000 miles, because she really has a passion for research and for finding out the truth. PMH, welcome to the show.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
It's absolutely a delight. I was so impressed with all of your material, and I went through it because I always read through people's books before I invite them to be a guest. And right off the bat, I was so impressed with what you said at the very front of your book in your special thank you page, that you said you offer a sincere thank you, the people whose stories you relate here, the experiences themselves, you consider them the heroes, that you are an experiencer turned researcher, and half of every royalty check on sales for this book will go to the International Association for Near-Death Studies, and at the end of 5 years, they will inherit full ownership of this phenomenal book. You will bow out because the book is not yours. It belongs to the people that it speaks to. That, to me, was such a powerful statement, because I don't know of many individuals that would even consider doing that.
Well, I'm very clear about that. Yes, I've done the work. I've been doing this kind of work since 1978. I'm one of the original researchers in the field of near-death studies. I'm up there with Raymond Moody and all the rest of them. But I'm very, very clear about the big book.
Mm-hmm.
The big book is up dated with the newest information as of the end of spring 2007. So it's really, really current information. And it's that kind of material that really belongs to the readership. And I cannot put my name on it as owner, because it belongs to the world. It belongs to everybody.
I think that's absolutely a wonderful attitude to take, because I agree with you. And I think the more that you can share information and factual information, not woo-woo stuff, but factual information, the more educated people can become and the less fear that they will have. And I think that that is so important. I've always said that the biggest enemies we have are fear, ignorance, and superstition. Now, I would like for you to share with my audience your personal near-death experience. You technically died 3 times between January and March in 1977. Tell my audience what happened.
There's no way that I can share that in a half-hour show. It would take hours. Let me just be very brief and say death number one was January the 2nd, 1977. It was a miscarriage and extreme hemorrhaging. 2 days later, death number two was January 4. That was a major thrombosis in the right thigh vein, which dislodged, followed by the worst case of phlebitis the specialist had ever heard of, let alone seen. And then 3 months later, on March 29, they don't know today for sure what killed me. There was no vital signs, no breath, no pulse. Nothing was working. They think perhaps it might have been a heart attack. They have not been able to isolate for sure what killed me, except I was.
Mm-hmm.
And then later that fall, I had 3 major relapses. one of which was total adrenal failure. I was working at the time with a blood pressure reading of 60 over 60, which tells you I wasn't doing so good.
Mm-hmm.
And I was one of those people who, after all of this was over, I had to relearn how to stand, how to crawl, how to walk, how to climb stairs, how to run, how to tell the difference between left and right, see and hear properly, and rebuild all my belief systems. So for me, coming back to life was a struggle. And, you know, a lot of people, when they talk about near-death experiences, they get real excited about them, and rightfully so, of course, but they forget that most of these experiences come from extreme trauma or violence.
Mm-hmm.
So, it takes a lot. My first one was very brief, more or less an out-of-body experience, but also being able to see thought as substance in the air. My second one was also an out-of-body experience. It was much, much longer, more complicated. It involved a number of different scenarios. Being met by my loved ones who had died and gone on before me, being met by Jesus, experiences with creation and the Creator. My third one was also long and complex. It had an out-of-body component as well. And then going out into the universe and joining with the center of creation, finding out what creation really is, how it works, the inner workings of creation and consciousness, and coming back with that. I was one of those people, one of the few, in fact, who was able to bring back all the details.
Mm-hmm.
And those are in my book, Future Memory. Not all of them, but most of the details of the inner workings of creation and consciousness. So, but in my third near-death experience, there was a particular component where I truly feel I was in the presence of God, and I heard a voice like no other voice I've ever heard. I would not compare it to an angel or a guide or a guardian or a holy one or anything like that. It was bigger than that and more intense and overwhelming than even that. And I call it the voice like none other.
Mm-hmm.
And my sense is that it was of God. And that voice said, and I quote, "Test revelation. You are to do the research. One book for each death." Book one was not named. Books two and three were named. I was told what was to be in each, but not how to do it. I was... it was explained to me what I was to do, but again, not how long it would take me or any of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm literally alive today because of that voice, because I was sent back to do the work. My work is researching the near-death experience and spiritual transformations and getting to the bottom of what it's all about. And I'm at the point now where finally I'm going to be able to wrap up my theoretical model and complete my work. So now that the big book is done, I can work on my theoretical model, get that done, and then I'm I'm free. You know, I've done my commitment. I'm free.
Well, Brad Steiger does the foreword in your book, and he compliments you on the fact that you used investigative skills that you learned from your police officer father.
Yep, I'm a cop's kid, dear. I was raised in a police station.
And you had over 3,000 adults and 277 children.
Well, now it's almost 4,000.
Amazing. Now, you were, when I checked in with you earlier, you said, "Donna, I want to be able to talk about the latest thing that's come out, the latest information."
Oh, yeah, I want to make an announcement. I want everybody to hear this. Because of four large clinical prospective studies done in three countries and a plethora of papers now published in peer-reviewed journals, because of this, the near-death phenomenon is the number one choice of scientists worldwide to study consciousness itself. Things like out-of-body experiences, the dead come back, visitations from the other side, otherworldly journeys, all of these things are now regarded as typical and normal for the phenomenon and are no longer relegated to things like oxygen deprivation, the dying brain, hallucinations of any kind. The field has now come of age. There are over 100 medical colleges and universities teaching classes about the near-death experience. Mayo Clinic College of Medicine now requires their first-year students to take a class on the near-death experience. So we have reached that point where we're no longer even parapsychological. We are now accepted by the medical community and accepted by the scientific community. And we are now at that point where we're doing the kind of research that we never dreamed we could ever do before.
Well, that is a phenomenal announcement, and I'm just thrilled that I'm one of those people that you're able to announce it through this programming. It is just marvelous because it's a long time in coming. That is a statement of how the mentality in the medical community worldwide is changing. Now, I'm not saying it's 100%.
No, it's not 100%.
It is finally being acknowledged for something other than what they had tried to box it in as. And I think that that is absolutely, absolutely phenomenal. Because these experiences have been going on with people ever since the beginning of mankind. I mean,
sure.
It's just there. And I think that the fact that we can be so open and communicate, that we have the language that we've developed to communicate it effectively, and that it can be expressed to other people. Now, let's cover something, and I'm going to be bouncing around with some of these questions.
Sure.
Here. There is a fact, then you bring this out in your book, that many people that have the near-death experience, now this isn't the majority, but a number of them, when they have it, it's not particularly golden lights and sweet sounds. Some of them go through what's considered a very dark experience, but the most important thing is that they have this memory that they bring back with them, and it does impact them.
Right.
Talk to us about those experiences that are not considered positive. You have so many of them in your book. How
Hellish experience, Donna, is not rare. It's not rare at all. It's always occurred, even with children. We can have very distressing or frightening or hellish experiences as well. Many times people are just as transformed by this kind of experience
mm-hmm.
as a more heavenly or uplifting one, but sometimes they're not.
Mm-hmm.
In my research base, it was 50-50. About 50% of them were transformed in a very uplifting and positive way, and the other 50% became very remorseful or very depressed or very disturbed and went on to be that way
mm-hmm.
And very fearful in their lives because of what happened to them. So, and you know, conversely, a more uplifting or heaven-like experience can also be traumatic to an individual. They can be angry about it. They can be fearful about it. They can feel as if they were cursed to have had such an experience. Even though it was beautiful and uplifting, it can interfere in their life to such an extent they themselves can be so different that life, as always, is no longer as always, and they become very frustrated by that. So even though a person had a heavenly experience or a very uplifting one, doesn't mean they accept it. And just because a person had a very distressing or fearful experience doesn't mean that they were upset or cursed or troubled to have had such an experience. In other words, you can't call it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't judge who has what type. You can say to yourself, well, obviously these people were murderers or torturers or bad people, mm-hmm. will have a hellish experience. Not so. Obviously people who commit suicide will have a bad experience. Not so. Obviously people who are pillars of the community and our wonderful fathers and mothers will have a great experience. Again, not so. What we find is, and the only way we can explain this, because it seems like the way you lived your life will have a very real effect on the experience you have, and in many cases, that's exactly what happens, but not all of them. And what we get as an answer to this puzzle comes from the experiences themselves.
Right.
The vast majority of them. And they say, you get what you need.
Mm-hmm. I think
you
that's
get whatever it is you need.
Mm-hmm.
If at that moment in time you need to be troubled or shaken up or awakened in some very impactful and forceful way, then that's what you get. If you just need something that is more life-affirming and more calming and helps you to realize how loved you are, then that's what you get.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you get what you need.
Fascinating. Let's talk about Ricky Bradshaw. This really stood out to me. And also, the two men in Las Vegas that so many people have absolutely loved, and that's Siegfried and Roy. But let's talk about Ricky Bradshaw, because he was from Staunton, Virginia, and it's...
Well, it's really called Staunton, dear.
Staunton.
The U is silent.
Thank you very much. And this was in 1975, and the experience he had was just... I mean, I read it, and I just thought, this is amazing, and it had to have been put in the medical books.
Well, it was. It is in the medical books. In fact, he was elected Trauma Case of the Year by the American Medical Society because of it.
This guy was trapped between two automobiles backing into each other at a grocery store parking lot. He had been knocked to his knees by the force of the blow while attempting to put grocery bags in the trunk of a car. Only his spine and a few cords around it were left intact before the drivers realized what had taken place and let up on the gas.
Right. He was ground in half, Donna. He wasn't cut in half. He was ground in half.
And they had him as a cadaver, pronounced dead at the hospital. He was heaped onto a gurney, and there were medical students that noticed this cadaver and said, gee whiz, can we experiment with this?
That's what saved him.
Yes. And after what they call an hour, I quote right from your book, an hour of hijinks, the heart monitor they'd hooked up to the body began to register bleeps. This is something that you can just imagine. If you were one of those medical students and you're working on the dead body that has been cut in half.
Well, it's been ground in half, dear.
Ground
in half.
Ground in half, which is gruesome enough to just imagine in your head, much less to have to look at and deal with when you're a student, and there were only these few tiny cords.
Right, and the spine.
The spine
was intact.
That were still connected, and it turned into an emergency. Can you imagine what those students...
Well, my dear, the students went to get a more experienced doctor only because of their concern that the equipment was malfunctioning.
Mm-hmm.
They did not think that he was coming back to life. They thought there was something wrong with the equipment. Remember, all they were doing was playing.
Right.
It was just a game.
Mm-hmm.
They were just playing to see what they could do with this cadaver. And all of a sudden, the guy comes back.
Yes, and can you imagine what that was like? Now, 2 years later and 24 surgeries.
Yeah.
Drawn in that 24 surgeries. And, of course, as you said, he's in the medical books. And, Rick, you quoted him as saying, by tugging here and stretching there, they wound up reconnecting vital parts in a manner necessary for reconstructive surgery. And Ricky's very grateful that they happened by after he had been pronounced dead.
Right.
You know, these are stories that are just absolutely mind-boggling, and I can hear some people saying, oh, yeah, sure. This is one in a gazillion.
It's one in a gazillion. That's right.
This is just phenomenal. But what did he bring back from this experience?
Well, I know Ricky. And to even be in this man's presence, is like being in a room filled with angels. He glows even today. He is so gentle and so loving. And what he brought back, he was shown all of his history from beginning to end. And he will only talk about bits and pieces of it. He will not talk about the future.
Mm-hmm.
He will not talk about some of what he was shown. He only talks about love, what we can do for each other, and little acts of kindness, what a difference it makes. He has since joined the Baha'i. He's now a Baha'i.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very active in the Baha'i faith. He has since married one of his nurses. And he's just a man of love.
Incredible. I mean, these stories. And for those of you that have just tuned in, we're talking about the big book of near-death experiences. If this is something that you have gone through,
yeah.
If this is something that you want to become more educated about, if you want to understand the language and not be afraid about it, if you've got children that have expressed any kind of experience to you, instead of saying, oh, that's just your imagination, this is stupid, don't bother me, because it frightens you, you need to be aware of this book. This book has so much good information in it. And you go into so many aspects, PMH.
We've got to get this book, Donna, in the hands of doctors and nurses and hospitals and clinics and colleges and universities.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You have artwork in here that's been done by people that have come back from these experiences, both by children as well as adults. None of this can be pre-programmed. You know, you hear it every once in a while, someone say, oh, well, we can induce this quite easily within people. We just do this and this and this and this. That's not true.
No, it's not true.
And out-of-body experiences are different from near-death experiences. Tell us the difference between the out-of-body.
Well, the out-of-body is the number one element that most people experience in a near-death experience. That's the number one, is the out-of-body. Number two is the light. Number three is the greeter. This idea of the light at the end of the tunnel, that's a myth. Yes, some people do experience that, but not that many.
Mm-hmm.
What I've mentioned is the most frequent. Now, the out-of-body component to a near-death experience is far more intense and detailed than your average near-death experience or your average out-of-body experience is. You know, you can have out-of-body experiences in your dreams. You can have it as part of yoga.
Mm-hmm.
There's various ways you can experience an out-of-body experience.
Yes.
But if you're involved in a near-death experience, that incident of leaving your body tends to be far more intense and detailed than the other kind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there is a memory, an emotional experience that goes along with it, an understanding. It varies in its complexity with every individual. It's very individualized. It's been in my observation, and I'm not as experienced as you are, but in my observation, it has been very, very unique to every single individual.
Right. You'll see certain things that are unique to you. The pattern is that this is universal, that this is part of the near-death experience, that most people who die or nearly die do indeed leave their bodies, often see things, feel things, know things, things are revealed to them that they could not possibly have known otherwise, and are later verified in third-party verifications.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely true. It's just amazing. Now, I wanted to share something quickly because I know we're coming close to being finished with our time together. And I want to mention, you have in your book a story about Patricia King, and she was watching television, and she herself has had near-death experiences. She happened to be flipping the channel to a movie entitled Bounce, starring Ben Affleck and Gwyneth Paltrow. And several days later, she was watching the Oprah Winfrey Show, which featured interviews with Ben Affleck and Gwyneth Paltrow, and they were going to have starring roles in the soon-to-be-released movie entitled Bounce. And she called the television station and confirmed that the show was not a rerun and that the film had, in fact, not yet been released, yet she had seen the whole movie.
We have a lot of that. It's called Future Memory.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote a book about it called Future Memory, if you ever want to get it.
Uh-huh. Well,
that's a separate book.
Yes, you need to send me a copy of that book, because I would love to have that. I'd love to have you on again and review that. But in the interim, let us have your website information, because I know my audience is very much interested in this. The big book is like an inch to an inch and a half thick, and it...
Listen, that's a book, it's written for busy people on the go, so don't be, you know, put off by the fact that it's like 494 pages.
It's something when you pick it up, you don't want to put it down, because every page you read through one page and then you go, wait a minute, she's not finished on this page, let me go to the next one. And it's amazing.
Yeah, there's so many sidebars. You know, you can get it so quickly and easily.
Mm-hmm.
And cartoons, there's fun stuff in it. Well, my website is myname.com. In other words, www.p, P as in Paul, M as in Mary, H as in Howard. So it's pmhatwater.com.
There we go. And she's written other books.
Lots
of. And there's other materials here. This is a woman.
And lots of DVDs out now.
That is great. So you'll find out all about her wonderful material. And this is a wonderful way for you, if you have someone that is frightened, you know, of dying, or, you know, it gives a whole different perspective. I mean, let's face it, we're all going to be shucking these chassis at some time or another. So why not be aware of the greatness of the life experience and be aware of what other people have gone through, because you may have a friend or a member of your family that may well go through an experience like this, and wouldn't it be wonderful if you were educated about it? My guest today is PMH Atwater. Her book, The Big Book of Near-Death Experiences, The Ultimate Guide to What Happens When We Die. What thoughts would you like to leave with my audience before we close?
Well, you know, with thousands and thousands of experiencers that I have personally interviewed, talked to, studied, they all say, or at least most of them say, the same four words. The same four words, and those words are, always there is life. Always there is life. Now, hang with that for a minute. That means there is no afterlife. There is no before life. That means life is eternal, because always there is life. In one form, in one way, you have always existed, and you will always exist, because always there is life.
Beautifully said. PMH, Dr. PMH Atwater, thank you so much for being my guest today. It's been a delight.
It's been my privilege.
And we're going to be taking a break. This is Donna Sebo, and we will be coming back with more wonderful information to share with you. Again, Go to pmh@water.com. You can find out all kinds of good information. The book we've been discussing is The Big Book of Near-Death Experiences, a must-have for your library. Donna Sebo here. We're coming back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Isn't she a delight? PMH Atwater, just a fascinating, fascinating woman, and I'm always in awe of someone that can be that good with detail, producing such a wonderful book. So that's The Big Book of Near-Death Experiences. Hey, telephone lines are now open. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. Telephone numbers are 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Also, Canadians, the toll-free number is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And then we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Now, when you call in, all I need from you is your first name, or your initial. Of course, I love to know where you're calling from. And then after that, just let me do my thing, and I'm an information resource. And then when I'm finished, you are welcome to ask me a question about anything you like. Oh, I'm getting excited. We're getting closer and closer to a big event that's coming up. That's February 8th through the 11th, the 6th Annual Conscious Life Expo, Conference, and Film Festival. This is being held at the LAX Hilton, which is at 5711 West Century Boulevard in Los Angeles. Now, if you'd like more information on this, if you have people in that area, if you're going to be flying into the area to attend this wonderful, wonderful event, you can find out about tickets by calling 800-367-5777. That's 800-367-5777. It is also to be found on the web at consciouslifeexpo.com. That's consciouslifeexpo.com. Now, I'm going to be in booth 517 at this event. I'm also going to be speaking on Saturday the 9th. We are going to be doing a live broadcast from the event, talking with some people that will be there on February the 8th, that afternoon. We're going to have all kinds of speakers like Daniel Brinkley. We're going to have Dan Millman, the Peaceful Warrior, Gay Hendricks, George Norrie. They've got a Conscious Business Expo Symposium. We've got yoga classes. We've got a spiritual comedy night. There is so much going on. You don't want to miss it if you have the opportunity to be in the area. So go to consciouslifeexpo.com. Call them, 800-367-5777. and look for my booth, 517. You'll see a bright yellow banner saying The Donna Sebo Show and bbsradio.com. Stop by and say hello. I'd love to meet you. I'm going to be there doing many consultations and interacting with people while I'm at that event for 3 days. So again, February 8th to the 11th. Also, I'm going to be appearing in Seattle at the Psychic Spectrum Expo, and that's going to be February 22nd to 24th for those of you in the state of Washington. It's going to be held at the DoubleTree Hilton at the Seattle Airport Convention Center, and that is just going to be another awesome event. And we've got all kinds of lectures. They're going to have a wine and cheese party with the keynote speakers. They've got all kinds of things that are going to be going on there. I'm going to be doing a live broadcast in Seattle as well. I'll be in booth 117 at that event. I'll be speaking every single day. So you'll be hearing about when I will be speaking as we get closer to that time frame. And then I'm also going to be back in the Los Angeles area speaking before the Quantum Leap group that is going to be in Universal City. So there's just a lot going on. I've got a wonderful schedule for the month of February. I'm looking forward to meeting many of you who are regular listeners to this show. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. Also our direct line of 530-876-3222. Yesterday, I had started telling you about a police officer, and then we got busy with phone calls, and I wasn't able to finish it. But I wanted to tell you the rest of this story, because I have this, I'll call it a belief system, in synchronicity. I believe very strongly that you can be in the right place at the right time for the right stuff. I know life is not always perfect, but this is a story about this policeman, and he works especially with young kids in a juvenile rehab center. And as you know, any of you that have ever worked with young people or if you've ever done any kind of police work, that can really be quite an emotional environment to be in. And he was dealing with a 17-year-old at the time who was a gang leader who had gotten into trouble. And he was very preoccupied this particular Friday evening when he had taken his family out to dinner at a Chinese restaurant. And he was preoccupied with, gee whiz, I wish I could do something with this kid. I wish I could get into that kid's head and help him turn things around. Well, while he was preoccupied with this, even though he was with his family, this was something that was on his mind. His 10-year-old daughter got him to come back to the present with his attention, saying, Dad, you've got to open up your fortune cookie. That's one of the most enjoyable parts of having a meal at a Chinese restaurant, as far as I'm concerned. So he opens it up, and he finds a strip of paper inside his fortune cookie that says, you may end up saving the day. And he thought, boy, what a fortune cookie. I can't even do anything with a 17-year-old kid that I'm so concerned about, because I can see this kid heading for prison. I'm not going to help. Gee whiz. So he crumpled this fortune that he'd gotten out of his fortune cookie and put it on the table, and he said, I just discarded it in my mind, and we paid our bill, and he said, we left. However, the words on that fortune cookie, you may end up saving the day, would not leave his mind. And the very next morning when he got up, he happened to be watching a little bit of rain that was coming down. He lived in Oklahoma. And he was thinking about, gee, maybe he had chosen the wrong profession, and just a lot of stuff going through his head. You know how that can be. We all go through it. And his wife went out to the garage, and the kids were in the den watching cartoons. He heard the garage door open, and he said then there was a scream. It was very, very loud. And there was a man's voice coming from across their yard. Judy runs into the house and says, John, you've got to come quick. Something has exploded next door. Well, this man that was next door to them, he just moved in. And they were stunned. And that was her that had screamed. And he said, okay. So he made the kids stay in the house. He raced outside. It was sleeting outside, and glass, he said, was everywhere. Smoke was coming through a small first floor bathroom window, and the man was crying out, "Help me, somebody please help me." And he was in a panic. Now, this man was bashing out the window with part of a toilet seat. He said, "I cannot get out." He was covered in blood. He said, "Okay, I'll help you." So there's John. He reaches up, but the window's really high. The man is having a tough time. But he tells John, he said, "The fire's out of control. I tried to put it out. My hands got burned. Please do something. Save me." Now, as he was trying to get out of the window, this man was getting pierced by these jagged pieces of glass that were stuck in the window frame. So John's first action was to knock the remaining part of the glass from the frame. And she told his wife, he turned around to her and he said, "Now you call 911, and she did immediately. So the flames were just getting bigger and bigger, so very, very fast. We're talking about just seconds here. And there was no time to wait for the fire department. So what John did, he stood on his tippy toes, reached his arms through the window, and he said he could feel the heat on his skin. The man was wearing a T-shirt. He managed to grab him by the armpits. Then he dropped his heels down into the hard, cold ground he was standing on, and he pulled. And little by little, this guy was coming through the window. Now, his T-shirt ripped, his chest was bleeding, and this John said, I'm sorry, I can't, I'm hurting you. And the guy said, "Don't stop now." So he reached in and with all the strength he could muster, managed to pull this man out through this window. The man was in shock, he was burned, he was bleeding. They managed to get him up on his feet and get him over into the adjacent yard. And then, within seconds after we got him out, there was this loud roar. Smoke poured from the window he had just escaped through, and the whole room was engulfed in flames. And the man saw this, and he said, "Another minute, and I would have been dead." Well, they found out what caused the fire. The man had a propane tank, and because of the storm and the cold, he was afraid of losing power, and he used the propane inside the house, and it exploded on him. Well, the man did recover, and after all the commotion was over, John's 10-year-old daughter comes up to him, and she said, "Daddy, it was just like the fortune cookie said last night. You saved the day." And he looked at her and he said, "You know what, sweetheart, you're right. I guess I was in the right place at the right time." And he said he realized when he thought about it that he really was in the right place in his life. He really was doing the right job because he liked being a police officer. And he realized that he could also ask for help in dealing with this young kid that he was trying to save in the rehab center. John's story is a powerful one, I think, because it will take sometimes experiences that, well, hopefully they're not going to be that dramatic, but experiences that affect us dramatically, that make us realize that we have a place, a very significant place in life. And it doesn't make any difference what our title is, but we are in the right place at the right time. And just like John never dreamed that he would need to rescue a next-door neighbor, he was there. He was able to do it, and he did do it. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Phone lines are open. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227, Canadians 888-815-9756, or 530-876-3222. We're going to take a break. Oh, I want to let you know, tomorrow we're going to be talking about the genie in your genes. Not J-E-A-N-S, it's G-E-N-E-S. The genie in your genes. Dawson Church. This is wonderful, wonderful health information. good information that can make a difference in the way you think about yourself, in the way you think about your health, and in the way you deal with your choices in life. It's absolutely marvelous, so we'll be talking about that tomorrow. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't you go away now.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756 if you're a Canadian, or 530-876-3222. Oh, hey, there's a fabulous event coming up. You've got to watch. I am going to do my darndest to try to watch it. And what is it? It's the Puppy Bowl. Yes, the Puppy Bowl Sunday. This is so much fun watching these little puppies just do their thing. I just think it's great entertainment. And there is a woman, Stephanie Thompson, she thinks it's great entertainment too. So she was sharing about this Super Bowl Sunday. It ended up being the Puppy Bowl Sunday. She said it's a big day for her husband, Michael. He's absolutely a football fanatic. But she said our four-year-old daughter, Micah, and I, we enjoy it. But her husband, she said, last year, his heart was set on all of us celebrating together, so after church, he turned on both our televisions upstairs and downstairs, and he said, I've got a surprise. And he turned to the Animal Planet, and there was the Puppy Bowl. Enjoy. And there they saw pups of all breeds romping around in an area painted like a football stadium. The family loved it. And all the dogs come from shelters, and the event helps them find homes and raise awareness. Well, Stephanie and her daughter laughed all day while her husband was somewhere else in the house watching his football game. And she said, watching the Super Bowl won't make a player out of my husband, but Micah and I visited a shelter after we'd seen the Puppy Bowl, and weeks later we were the happy owners of a 3-pound pug. Now, Puppy Bowl 4 airs on Animal Planet Sunday, February the 3rd, which isn't far away at all. That's this upcoming Sunday. I just think it is absolutely delightful to watch. I've seen parts of it before, and it's just so much fun. So I wanted to be sure to remind you, if you love puppies, you're not going to want to miss this. And, hey, if you're not into football, what a fun way to be able to enjoy football, but with a whole different perspective. Donna Sebo here, 877-876-5227, Canadians 888-815-9756, also our direct line of 530-876-3222. If you're a new listener to the show, I'm so delighted that you're able to join us, and I just want you to know, all I need from you is your first name or initial, and then after that you can ask me about anything that you like. Now, there was some information that I had here regarding some medical information, but you know what? I thought I was going to, I'd ship, because it's not going to be enough time for me to get all of that in to you, but I thought I would give you some information on plastics. Now, I don't know about you, but because I get so much material sent to me, I've had some material about plastics that say, gee, we should totally do away with it, and then other materials that say this, that, or the other about plastics. Well, plastic, I think, is going to be around with us for quite a while. I am not adverse to plastic. I think that it has its place, and something I learned recently is that there are plastic containers, so-called plastic containers, that are made from corn. That's right, from corn. And they're totally biodegradable. Now, plastic has its place, but we have learned from experience that the way we have been making plastics, the biodegradable life on these items is thousands of years. I mean, it's just not going to break down. So we've gotten into recycle, but we find we've got so many people on this planet that are using it, we have to find a better formula. So there is a company, and I can't recall where it is located, I believe it's somewhere in the Corn Belt of the United States, that has been supplying grocery stores and various businesses with this biodegradable plastic container. And it's wonderful. Just takes resourcefulness and ingenuity, and we can solve problems. Well, a lot of people are worried about plastic, and there's some good concern for that. There's good reason for people's concern. Now, here's some information that you need to be aware of regarding plastic. One, if you're going to use water bottles, any plastic bottles containing juice and other staples are perfectly safe. Now, Sarah Risch, PhD, she's a food scientist at Michigan State University. She said the FDA regulations ban harmful chemicals from plastics that touch food or water. Baby bottles are safe to drink from, too. Just don't heat them up in the microwave unless their labels say it's safe. And that's one of the key components, is that if you use something in the microwave, you're going to change the chemical structure of the plastic. So you need to be aware of that. Storage containers like Gladware are fine in the fridge and the microwave if marked microwavable. Same for the new Tupperware containers. And the old Tupperware, for 50 years, the company has followed FDA regulations. So if it's not cracked, it's safe, even if it's scratched. Now, you can always check. If you're a Tupperware fan, I think they put out marvelous products. Call 800-366-3800. You give them the number on the bottom of your Tupperware container, and they can tell you if it's okay to use it in the microwave. Plastic wrap, they say it's safe for the fridge, but only use it in the microwave if the box says microwave safe. And you should leave 1 inch between the plastic and food so chemicals can't touch your food. When defrosting meat, poultry, or fish in the microwave, remove it from the store packaging and use freezer wrap. When heated, foam trays and plastic wraps could allow chemicals to seep into your food. Remember, you're changing the molecular structure when you use it in microwaves. Now, those plastic containers you should never, ever use are washed out plastic containers from foods like cottage cheese and margarine. They're okay if you're going to put something in cold storage. But whatever you do, do not use them in the microwave. They could leach harmful chemicals into your food, and the same goes for your plastic takeout containers from restaurants, different places. So as consumers, we just need to be aware. And I think the more we can be aware, the safer our world's going to be. This is Donna Sebo. I know we're out of time. It's been a delight sharing this hour with you. And remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And you are an expression of life that's one and unique unto itself. Take pride in that. And always strive to make your light shiner brighter and brighter every moment that you have. This is Donna Sebo. Talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
This is Pete Seeger, and you're listening to BBS Radio.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.